Hello, all. Welcome to the Ex-Millennial Man podcast, the podcast for SeedSing.com. I am your host, R.D. Kulik, and with me here is the chef supreme of the West St. Louis County, the Iron Chef. I don't know, what do you cook? Barbecue?
Mac and cheese with bacon and a grill.
The Iron Chef, mac and cheese, bacon. Ty Kulik, how are you today, Ty?
Hi, everybody. Yeah, I'm pretty good on a grill. I can grill stuff pretty well. And then my daughter really likes my bacon, mac and cheese, but my wife is a true Iron Chef.
Oh, I sense a challenge. You need to set up a kitchen stadium in your house.
Our household, she's the one who, case in point here is one time I made mashed potatoes and I followed a recipe and she would not stop laughing at me for following a recipe for mashed potatoes.
I got this idea, a podcast I listened to, 1-900-HOT-DOG, and they find just these weird little pieces of pop culture movies or TV shows. And they talked about one particular episode of the Japanese Iron Chef. And when they were describing it, I'm like, oh, this is interesting. But then thinking about it, they could be describing any episode of Iron Chef because that show was insane, Ty. The Japanese version of that show was insane.
Yeah, you and I had talked previous about this and you said we were going to talk about Iron Chef, and I'm like, oh, I watched it. And you said, no, the Japanese Iron Chef. And I was like, oh, no, I used to watch that quite a bit in high school with a friend of mine. We'd stay up late. That would come on. And it was, I don't remember the name of the game show that was on. Also, that was a Japanese game show, but it was, yeah, you know, that preceded Iron Chef. And the Japanese Iron Chef was one of the coolest, most insane, most unique things I've ever seen in my life.
Well, and there's another kind of reason I wanted to do this was when I was telling my wife about that 1-900-HOT-DOG episode. She was talking about how basically Iron Chef America on Food Network just completely changed Food Network from a thing where you would watch, where it was a cooking channel, I think, originally, where you would watch people make food like the old Julia Child show, and it's turned into nothing but competition. Now,
all it is.
Yeah.
All it is.
Everything. So I'm going to talk in the first half about the genesis of this, the Iron Chef Japanese show, the original one. And then the second half, talk about the American one and kind of what the fallout from all of that is. And the second half, Ty, there are no heroes. So I can tell you that.
Well,
right,
yeah. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that too, because when you do, I'll go through the cooking channel and I tend to like the cooking channel more. And I know it's a competition, but they have Man versus Food and they have a Carnival Paradise or something it's called, or Carnival Eats. I really like that Carnival Eats show. But yeah, when I turn on the Food Network, I will go on there searching for Ina Garten because I feel like she's the only one who just does a straight up cooking show. And I know our mom watches Pioneer Woman, who does a straight up cooking show, but I know her family said some problematic things in the past. So. Yeah.
Well, let's talk Iron Chef. The original Iron Chef premiered on the Fuji television network in Japan, October 10th, 1993. And this is really probably one of the first like cooking type competition shows. They ran for 309 total episodes.
Oh my
God. Okay. Now I'm going to play the intro. This is a little bit of a longer clip. It's about 2 minutes. So I'm going to play the intro to the original Japanese Iron Chef, bring back some memories, and then we're going to discuss.
Okay.
5 years ago, a man's fantasy became reality in a form never seen before, a giant cooking arena, a kitchen stadium. The motivation for spending his fortune to create Kitchen Stadium was to encounter new original cuisines, which could be called true artistic creations.
On a cuisine!
To realize his dream, he first secretly started selecting the top chefs of various styles of cooking. And he named his men the Iron Chefs, the invincible men of culinary skills. Iron Chef Japanese is Masaharu Morimoto. Iron Chef French is Hiroyuki Sakai. Iron Chef Chinese is Chen Kenichi. And Masahiko Kobe is Iron Chef Italian. The Kitchen Stadium is the arena where Iron Chefs await the challenges of master chefs from around the world. Both the Iron Chef and Challenger have 1 hour to tackle the theme ingredient of the day. Using all their senses, skills, creativity, they're to prepare artistic dishes never tasted before. And if ever a challenger wins over the Iron Chef, he or she will gain the people's ovation and fame forever.
All right, Ty, I want to start at the very end there, where if the challenger beats the Iron Chef, do you know what they win?
The admiration of everybody?
Yes.
in the crowd.
Yes.
It's like a Great British Bake-Off. Like, those people don't win a money prize. They win a platter, yeah. Which is, to me, that's way better than winning a cash
prize for those people. Right. And I want to stress, this is one of the very first kind of big food competition shows. So
I think it's so much better that they win admiration. Like, that's way better for those chefs. Those chefs don't need any more money.
Oh, and I'm going to talk about like winning percentages and stuff like that. Yeah. But a few things I did want to highlight is they have this whole story. They built this one guy, the chairman, Takashi Kaga.
And my cuisine. That's what he says there.
I am going to flat out tell everybody that I'm going to get a lot of names wrong. I completely apologize. I have been practicing, but I'm not quite there yet. Oh, and every show starts with this like French saying. It says, "Show me what a man eats and I'll show you who he is," as something like that. The interesting thing about this show, though, was it was the first time you really saw fast-paced cooking. You saw chefs creating. Again, I go back to the Julia Child thing. She would have things prepared, and she's showing you how to make something. This was you watching chefs create and in real time. Now, before I get to it, people are going to be like, oh, they have 1 hour to cook and things like that. When it comes to the secret ingredient, they usually know where it's coming from. They know if it's a fish, or they know if it's a vegetable, or they know something like that. And the original version of this show had a preliminary round where two no-name chefs or unknown chefs would battle, and whoever won that would then go against an Iron Chef. They would know kind of the style and what everybody was going to. But I want to talk about the chairman first here, okay?
Yeah.
This Takashi Kaga. Okay. How would you describe this man?
He's pretty wild. Like, he would wear loud clothing. He would yell all the time when he showed off whatever the secret ingredient was. He would do like this crazy karate-esque type chop. Like, he was what drew me and my friends in when we first started watching it, because we're like, what is going on here? We've never seen anything like this before. We have to watch this guy.
Yeah, he looked like some kind of royalty, like the Earl of cooking or something like
totally,
that.
Yeah.
And they make this out like he's searching for the perfect food, and the big floppy hair. He's still alive now, but he's an actor mainly though, like in some movies, TV shows. But the things he was really known for, he was a big time stage actor in Japan. He originated the role of Jesus Christ in Jesus Christ Superstar. Jean Valjean in Les Miserables, later on played Javert. He played Macbeth. I mean, he is a huge, like, huge, huge actor.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it, in the opening, doesn't he eat, like, he takes, a bite out of a bell pepper.
Yes.
Okay, I was going to say an apple, but I thought that's not.
Yeah, no. That's, we're going to get to that. But he would always take a bell pepper, look at it really angrily, take a bite, and then smile at the camera.
Totally. <yeah. laughs>
And the other thing I want to say is this, all the sous chefs, all the assistant chefs were from a place called Hattori Nutrition College. And one of the main commentators was Dr. Yuko Hattori, who this was his culinary school. This is
very cool.
One of the world's most renowned culinary schools.
Okay.
So there are real people behind this, and not just when we talk about the American one, not celebrities per se, but people who were very serious in the food business. And I know the people that created the show said Japanese food is only seen as either steak or sushi. And they wanted to show how varied Japanese food is, but the fact that all the chefs on this are Japanese, but they have one that's French cuisine.
And Italian. Yeah.
Now, the Italian one I want to discuss too, because he didn't quite get the love on this show. He wasn't quite on there a lot. But
is he? Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe just Italian cuisine's just not as big there. But
I don't think it's as exciting, honestly. No. And like, we come from an Italian family. I think Italian food's great, but would you rather sit down to a bowl of pasta, which I love, or this cool looking plate of sushi
love?
Or you mentioned French, like French food. I'm not big on like taking pictures of my food when I sit down and eat, but anytime I've been to a French restaurant, the food is beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
I almost feel bad eating.
Well, what's funny about the Japanese version, just how crazy this all was, and not just the chairman. The chefs would always arise like on out of the basement or something.
And it was like steam.
And the Italian one, Chef Kobe, he would come out with a full string orchestra. I mean, I was watching some of these clips, and they would always, almost all the time, not always, but almost all the time, the three or four chefs would all come out, then the challenger would be like, I'm going to take Iron Chef Brent. And then Iron Chef Kobe Italian would go down with his string orchestra still playing.
I didn't get picked this time. Sorry, buddy.
And they were in like elaborate wear, and it was one of the first times you would see like camera people running around the kitchen to get all the action. So Ty, I'm going to tell you how successful, and again, we're talking about 300 plus episodes, how successful the Iron Chefs were. Okay. In the Japanese.
I'm very curious about Morimoto, because I am a fan of his. I've kind of followed him. I know we're going to talk about Iron Chef America in the second half, but I kind of have followed Morimoto because I enjoy the way he cooks food.
Let's start with Morimoto, because he is going to be kind of the guy that carries through both this first and second half. He was actually the third Iron Chef Japanese.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And has the lowest or second lowest winning percentage at 67%.
So he won 2/3 of the time.
Yeah.
That's the second lowest.
Yeah. The lowest was Iron Chef Japanese, the second one. And he had 66%. That's the lowest of all of them.
Okay.
Now, the person that was on the show the most by far was Hiroku Saki, who is Iron Chef French, the second Iron Chef French. Saki, Iron Chef French, was on 70 of the episodes. And he won 82% of the time.
Wow, man.
Now,
that's pretty good.
Iron Chef French has the best, the first Iron Chef French, who he was only on 7 episodes, only lost one. So he has an 87.5%. My point is, the Iron Chefs usually win.
Yeah.
And
as you would expect them to.
Yes.
I mean, there's a show that my son really likes called Beat Bobby Flay. Bobby Flay wins most of the time.
Yes.
It's funny that you mentioned.
Going to talk about that
well,
show.
And it's funny the way that you mentioned how Iron Chef Japan started, where it was two competitors go up against each other and then they face an Iron Chef. That's exactly what Bobby Flay does with this show. So tell me him and his people didn't steal that from these.
Oh,
people.
No, absolutely. And if you watch the other weird, because I watched three different episodes of Iron Chef Japan preparing for this, and they're on YouTube. They're about 40 minutes long. So the show is about an hour with commercials. They don't get to the ingredient until like 10 minutes into the show.
Again, they got to do that 2-minute intro, and then they got to intro all the people. And if you have a string quartet or whatever playing with you, it's going to take some time.
What I think they do that's really, really good, one of them I watched was one of the Iron Chef Chinese food. And I'm going to discuss exactly what that was because it is wild. But they take like 5 minutes or so to tell the story of the challenger and where they come from. And one of the episodes I watched was with the Iron Chef Italian, and they had some Guido looking dude from Rome, and they playing the Godfather music in the background.
His name Mario?
Yeah. But these were incredibly respected chefs. The guy they got for this one particular episode I'm going to talk about is considered one of the best Chinese food chefs in all of China.
Mm-hmm.
They got some good
mess
people.
Around.
Yeah.
The reason these people became Iron Chefs, you know, picked by the commission or whatever he calls himself, is because they're really, really good at their craft.
Yes. I want to take you through just some of the ingredients. And like we said, they introduce a person, they pick the Iron Chef, they give you a secret ingredient. You have to make, I think it's at least 3 dishes with that ingredient. The record I know was 8 dishes that somebody made one time, but you got to make at least 3. And then there's a panel of like expert judges. And I have a little clip of judges that I'll go through, and we'll talk about why this show became so popular in the States.
All right.
Here's a rough flavor of the secret ingredients that they were dealing with. Now, in the very first episode, it was salmon.
Okay.
I mean, not bad.
We have that a couple times a month in my household. Yeah.
And they really wanted to try to highlight some of the ingredients you could get in Japan. So you had a lot of seafood. You had lobster, octopus, banana was one in the first season.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, nothing. I mean, this show gets kind of labeled as having really weird ingredients.
I don't think it's that. Like, the first time I ever saw somebody make fish ice cream was on Iron Chef. So I'm like, oh, that's weird. But they're using fish. It's not like they're serving you. I don't even know what a cliche thing would be. I don't know. I don't think it's necessary. But maybe as I've gotten older, my feelings on food have changed a lot. So.
And I'll talk about where I think some of it became weird to us. But because especially there's one they did with chicken. I'll talk about a chicken dish.
Okay.
The show was a pretty big hit out of the gate for Japan. Second season, they had three times the number of episodes that they ordered. And they started off the year with pork. Not bad. I mean, there's a lot of, it actually was a Chinese food battle. A lot of pork and Chinese food. And then you had squid, sea bream, anago.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. Wait till I get to the ones I do know. There's more seafood, scallop, there's bamboo shoot, truffle. And as I go through all of this stuff, bonito, I think that's a type of fish.
Yeah.
Let's talk about sea urchin roe and soft roe.
Okay.
Do you know what roe is?
It's the eggs. It's like the fish's eggs.
Yeah.
It's essentially their babies.
Yes.
It's
caviar. It's not.
Yeah, I've eaten it on sushi before.
Yeah. Do you know what soft roe is?
I have no idea what soft roe is.
It's fish semen.
Oh, okay.
I know.
If that's what you want to eat and they prepare. You had a friend, I won't say his name on here because I don't know, but I remember one time he told me crab rangoon was whale semen. I'm like, oh, that's gross. If he said to me, and I've always thought of this, I don't care what they make, as long as it's prepared well and it tastes good, I'll eat whatever. And I always think of that whenever I hear something I may not want to eat. I'm like, well, this person told me as long as it's prepared well and I won't get sick and it tastes good, well, I'm good to go.
I say I need to find the cue from our first watch rewatch of The Dark Backward of Bill Paxton.
I ate a dog then.
You have a lot of eel, a lot of different mushrooms that you see. I was talking about that throw. It gets used not as a main ingredient a lot, but you watch these episodes. I know Chairman Kaga did this video of the five best things he ever ate and the three worst. And one of the worst was like a smoked soft roe sake.
Oh, gross.
Thinking to myself, you're drinking fish semen.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And sake.
I don't like that.
Which is gross.
I've never had sake before, so I don't know what it tastes like.
Whenever they did noodles, like the show would always look like they're cooking, they stop, they serve the judges. But stuff with like noodles need to be prepared fresh. So every time they made a dish, they would give it to the judges and then they would taste it to make sure it worked. And then they'd have it prepared to give it to the judges fresh.
Okay. When, all right.
I mean, just some of the secret. Nobody should be surprised and be like, oh, the show's not realistic.
Reality TV is not reality.
And then you get, let's see, some spiny lobster, soybeans, some Matsuba crab. I can hear my wife correcting me already here. You get right in a row here, liver, caviar, swordfish. But here's the one I want to talk about, Ty. Swallow's nest.
Is that a bird? A swallow bird?
Yes. Okay. Edible bird's nest, also known as swallow's nest. It's created
like
from...
nest that they live in?
Yes, hold on. Created from solidified saliva by the birds that basically make a nest. Now, here's the thing about swallow's nest.
Solidified saliva? You're just going to blow past that? That's spit.
Yes.
Okay.
We just got done talking about drinking fish semen. So
yeah, but I don't know.
Here's the thing about swallow's nest, and I watched this episode. It is widely known, they say on the show, that they spent about $25,000 to procure enough swallow's nest for two people to cook four or five dishes.
Okay.
Its current price right now for swallow's nest is about $4,300 a pound.
Holy cow. Okay.
And there's like I think it's a Chinese saying where it says swallow's nest for the emperor, oysters for the masters, and sea urchin for your friends. I know I'm getting it wrong, but it's something like that. So swallow's nest is like considered a legendary ingredient.
Okay.
They tell you multiple times during the show that it tastes like nothing.
But it's $4,000 a pound and it tastes like nothing. What's the point then?
They say it numerous times and I'm like, what in the hell?
Yeah, what's the point of it then? Is it an aphrodisiac? Does it make you feel 10 years younger? What's the deal with it?
And I will tell you, when I watched this episode and they made a lot of like soups and other type stuff where you could see it's like this, it looks like this white fibrous thing, but everything they made looked like almost like a gelatin. It did not look appetizing at all. And the judges were all like, holy crap, I feel like the emperor, because again, this is what the most important people in the world eat is swallow's nest.
That's so weird. I don't understand why it doesn't taste like anything. I don't drink alcohol, so I don't know, but I imagine the gold flakes and Goldschlager taste like something.
I mean, they're so small that it's almost like, you're not going to, and they're so like thin. But for the most part, like, there is some of that weird stuff. They've had, like, snapping turtle, something, and I know they used it in the Swallow Nest one. Somebody made a shark fin soup. And
there was that, like, technically illegal?
No, I looked it up. It's not, but it's frowned upon. One of the people, she was an actress, would not eat it. She didn't make a scene about it. She just said, I will not eat it. But half the things are a little weird, but most of the time you're seeing things like egg. You see a lot of battle lobster. You'll see a lot of different pork, eel, again, tons of fishes.
Thing with these types of foods, it lends itself to Chinese, Japanese, French, Italian cooking. It's essentially the same thing in America, except I think Iron Chef America, which we'll talk about, they use a little bit more beef.
Yes. Yeah, we'll go through that. There was, I never found this episode, but one of the episodes, the secret ingredient is a 1,000-year-old egg.
I've heard of that before.
Yeah, it's like a pickled egg, basically. Almost like a kimchi, like a, what do you call that?
Fermented cabbage.
Fermented, yeah. It's almost like a fermented hard-boiled egg.
Yeah. But I bet you it tastes good as hell, though, man. Like, I would want to eat one.
where this show got a little weird, I think, for a lot of people, wasn't even so much in the ingredient, but was in the dishes they would serve. Because, again, we're talking about a country whose one of their main dishes has seaweed in it. So you would get these preparations. Like, there was this chicken one was almost, he took, like, a whole small chicken and shoved a bunch of truffles underneath its skin. And then, like, boiled it. I mean, it just did not look good at all. But the judges were like, holy crap, this is great.
Well, you'll see chefs do that now on cooking shows. They'll take, like, butter and shove it under the chicken skin because that keeps it moist. I wonder if I've never eaten truffle in my life. I don't know what it tastes like, but I wonder if that helps with the flavor of the chicken skin.
Yeah, it very well could be. Some of it, like I said, it didn't look as appetizing. There's some of these things they made. Chicken was also, like, a Christmas episode. And this guy built this little salad on top of, like, these pieces of chicken on a piece of bread that looked like a Christmas tree. Some of the presentation looked amazing.
Yeah.
The Swallow's Nest stuff looked, like I said, like bad gelatin.
Did it look like what they ate in Snowpiercer? Those bricks?
Pretty much. Okay. And speaking of Swallow's Nest, they looked at the 300 plus episodes of this show that each episode on average, based on how much they spent on all the ingredients, was about $25,000 per episode.
You think about everything they had to have in that kitchen and then getting these lobsters, not cheap.
No.
So you're getting these expensive, high value proteins. That's not going to be a cheap grocery.
No.
Even there in 1993.
There was one episode where the challenger, he had made the secret ingredient was asparagus. And he said he used about $1,000 worth of lobster just to get the flavor into the asparagus.
Oh, my God. Wow. Yeah, now, like, that's the craziest thing to me.
The good thing is all of the food that they made, basically, was brought over to the Hattori food, the cooking college. And obviously all those kids there were getting, they were getting experience with the highest.
They were getting to eat Swallow's Nest.
Yeah.
So,
look, I want to end this half, though, talking about how we came to this show. So they started to, as the late 90s, started to show this on like public access in Hawaii, San Francisco, and New York.
Okay.
And it was dubbed. And Fuji TV was like, no, this show is a Japanese show about Japanese cultures. The dubbing looks like bad 1970s kung fu dubbing. You can't dub it anymore. But Food Network ended up getting the license, and then they ended up dubbing it.
Yep.
Now, I'm going to play, because this is going to also be a good break between what the Japanese show is like and what the American show is like. I'm gonna play thing of judging, and Ty, I just randomly went through like five different judging things, and this one not only was my favorite, but it is definitely a different mark from what we got on Iron Chef America. I can't remember what I think this was, the asparagus battle it might have been.
Okay.
But I'm gonna play for you, and you're gonna hear the dubbing, because you'll also, if you listen carefully, you can actually hear the Japanese in the background. But I'm gonna play for you how the judges approached this poor challenger who's just trying to go up against one of the best chefs in the world.
Okay.
And now the moment of truth, tasting and judgment. On the panel today for the Sweet Fish Battle are former Lower House member Shinichiro Kurimoto, actress Mayuko Takata, and culinary critic Asako Kishi. First, the dishes of Challenger Omino.
It's sweet fish. I was wrong about this.
This is nice. It's very light, and it's easy to eat. It's not oily at all. The sourness of the grated radish is what makes this very nice.
Well, I completely agree with her. But, well, I don't see why this is so special, you know? To me, this dish kind of falls short of conveying the natural flavors of, the fish itself.
As a dish, it's light and nice, but it could be made with any kind of fish, you know?
Man, I also that gave me like this weird sense memory of watching it when I was a high schooler and being like, why are they dubbing it? Why can't they do subtitles? Like, it's all crazy. And then I love the dubbed voices. Like, you could tell the second guy was smug. And he was supposed to be a butthead. So, like, I think that's hilarious.
This is why we all fell in love with this show. I don't want to say it's not, I don't think it's racism or things like this, but when you watch that clip and you could see the challenger, I don't think Japan was his native language because he had like an interpreter next to him. And as the interpreter's telling him, you could see his face just falling.
Hilarious. I love it. Like, no, this could be made with any other fish dish. And I bet you if either you or I ate it, it'd be like, this is the greatest thing I've ever
had. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's around the time that Iron Chef America, that Fuji TV is maybe run its course. And yeah, they've made this huge deal with Food Network too. Show their old shows, that Food Network decided they wanted to get in on this. And one of the later Iron Chef, the Japanese versions, is they went to America to do a certain episode. And Ty, we will talk about that after the break.
Excellent.
Hello all, this is RD, and I want to talk to you about something called Public Forum Productions. Now, you've heard me reference it, and if you are a person that looks deep, deep into the notes, you'll see that Public Forum Productions actually is the producer of The Ex-Millennial Man, the podcast you're listening to right now. Well, 2024 is going to be a big year at PSP, and I want to invite you to become part of that. Go to publicforumproductions.com, and you can see the stable of shows we have. It's a network, kind of like, think of it like Netflix, and Ex-Millennial Man is one of the shows. We also have High Heels and Politics, First Watch, Rewatch, and coming in 2024, we already have two shows actively in production right now. One is called Where Did You Go to High School? I know a lot of our listeners are in the St. Louis area and are in Southwest Ohio because you guys know Ty or myself. And that's the biggest question. Where did you go to high school? For the record, I went to Lafayette High School in St. Louis, in the St. Louis area. But it's a big, big deal. My son here in Southwest Ohio goes to a really well-known high school, and it kind of identifies who we are. Also, the other show we have working on is called Satan Remembers. It's a history of the 1980s Satanic Panic. That is, we're done planning it. We're getting ready to record, do interviews and stuff. And I want to really make this good. It's going to be a series that's going to go through what happened in the early 1980s and kind of the moral panic and the accusations of Satanism that destroyed a lot of people's lives, destroyed a lot of people's businesses, and all were completely unfounded. And I want to do that now because a lot of what we saw 40 years ago, we're seeing today. So I think it's very important. Again, go to publicforumproductions.com, reach out to me, and if you want to be a guest, if you want to do your own podcast, if you have information that can help us with these things, because like I said, those two shows are currently in production, but we have a few that are in pre-production, and I'm going to really need some voices for there. So again, publicforumproductions.com, and let's get back to the conversation.
Okay, Ty, let's talk about Bobby Flay.
I don't like Bobby Flay. He's arrogant. He's a butthead. Mm-hmm. He smug. He thinks he's too good for everybody. What else do you want to talk about him?
So Food Network wanted to make an Iron Chef America. And in that time, there was another one that Bill Shatner, William Shatner, had like hosted.
Bill Shatner, are you best friends with him?
Yeah. I listen to the Star Trek podcast and they always call him Bill. And I'm like, William Shatner. He did some like something not related, they were trying to launch it, but never really went. But this Iron Chef America, now this is still Iron Chef Japan. They decided to they would travel every now and then and go to different places, go to like Paris. I know they went to Beijing, all this other stuff. Well, they did one particular one in New York. And they brought Miramoto, who's probably their biggest star, to go up against a young New York chef by the name of Bobby Flay.
Okay. God, I hope Morimoto won.
He did win.
Okay.
But that's not what this is remembered for. Do you know what this is remembered for?
I have a very, very vague and fleeting memory of this episode. I have no idea. I couldn't have even told you it was Flay versus Morimoto.
Okay, I'm going to play for you. Now, you're going to hear the audio. I'll discuss. You're going to know what happens hearing what they're talking, and we'll discuss it afterwards. They have to cook everything, and then they get ready for the judges. So this isn't even judging. But at this point, Flay is done cooking. There's about like 30 seconds left, and you see Morimoto still running around trying to get things together. And the whole thing looks like it was kind of, it didn't look as good as Kitchen Stadium in Japan. Sure. It looked like it was thrown together. But this is what ensues while the cooking part is over.
And that's it. They're done. The greatest battle in Iron Chef history, the Rock Crab Battle from New York, is over.
Raise the roof, yo! Raise the roof!
How was the battle?
It was insane. I cut myself in the first 10 minutes, and I was getting electrocuted every 3 minutes. But you know what? We rocked the house.
So, are you going to win tonight?
I don't know. Yeah, we're going to win. That's it. We're going to win. I hope so. I wish it was tough.
Next, let's talk with Iron Chef Morimoto. How was the battle tonight?
Well, 1 hour's too short. By the way, he's not a chef. You know, after finishing, he stood up on the cutting board. That's not right.
So Bobby Flay, while Morimoto's finishing up, jumps onto the counter and starts raising his hands up and yelling, and Morimoto is pissed.
This is like Tom Cruise on Oprah when he's talking about, I cannot remember the name of his wife. Katie Holmes, yeah. And now that you play that, I remember this being a big deal, and I remember thinking, that's not cool what he did.
No, in Morimoto specifically, I cut the
but
clip
Bobby
off.
Flay did. Morimoto's right.
No, no. That's... But he said he went through, Morimoto actually, there's a little bit more after that, when he's like, he's not a chef, and she's like, what do you mean? He's like, the cutting board, the knives are sacred, and he's standing on them.
Yeah.
Whereas the Japanese version is, I said, even the Italian one with a string orchestra and them rising from the dungeon of Kitchen Stadium or whatever. It was very formal. They're always like bowing and respect and all this stuff. And you bring Morimoto and then Bobby Flay acts like the clown like this is.
Mm-hmm.
Man, was he mad.
That's pretty bad. I forgotten about that. Now that you played it, it started flooding back. But yeah, for Bobby Flay to essentially show up somebody like Morimoto like that is so wrong. And it's so indicative of what America is and has become.
They ended up, they went against each other three times during the Japanese and the American version. I think the second time might have been on Iron Chef America when they were done cooking. Bobby Flay went over to the counter, took the cutting board, moved it over, and then stood up on the counter and started to be a jackass again.
Why does he have to stand up on a counter? You're a chef. Like, I imagine if I worked in his restaurant and I made a dish that I felt was so good that I stood up on a counter, he would fire me in a second.
Mm-hmm.
So why does he think he can do that?
Well, as I said, we're going to talk a bit about Bobby Flay on this part of the podcast. This is
I'm glad Morimoto won. That makes me happy.
Yeah, yeah. And Iron Chef America launched on March 6, 2005. And they had
12 years after, or wait, 12 years after the original show, right?
They had Mario Batali, who was a big name chef, who again we'll talk
canceled.
About. he was on there. He was one of the originals. Wolfgang Puck was one of them. Bobby Flay, Morimoto. I think those were the original people. And it's the same kind of setup. But I want to talk about the new chairman.
Right? Who's in John Wick 3, you mean?
Yes. Yes, he is.
His uncle, as he says on the show.
Yeah.
Instead of biting the pepper, he bites an apple. Oh, I know all about this guy.
Mark Allen Descascos. Again, I'm sorry.
He is incredible in John Wick.
Oh, yeah. Also. Yeah, he plays Zero.
I was blown away. I'm like, because I took our dad to see that, and I kept telling him, that's the guy from Iron Chef America. I'm watching him on TV.
Yeah.
And he said something to me like, I think he's on CSI, too.
Yes, okay. Yeah. He's a big-time martial artist actor who was born in Hawaii, not Japan. The story of the show is they brought him in, and he was the nephew of Chaga, and he would always look at a bell pepper, and then you'd see an apple, and you'd bite into that instead.
Totally.
He was actually pretty great. I thought he was.
Yeah, I have no problem with him.
If you go, I didn't grab the clip, but if you go for the secret ingredient beer, because every time he would come on stage, he'd do a bunch of backflips. And then they would
they put in the noises, like, you hear on the TV. Yeah.
And they would raise the thing, and like the one that's beer, he goes, beer!
Pizza dough is another good one that he did as well.
So he leaned into it. He was,
yeah, for sure.
He was absolutely great. But the first few episodes, there was, I believe there's only five or four first episodes. Your ingredients were trout, lobster, eggs, and then a group of like seafood, scallops, sea urchin, some of that other stuff. Again, some of these you could call higher end ingredients, but they'd have buffalo. They had elk one time.
Sure.
Nothing like Swallow's Nest.
No.
There's the pizza dough one, tilapia. It was a little bit more accessible. And the show wasn't quite as, no matter how crazy we called the Japanese one, it had this sereneness to it. The American one was like a Michael Bay movie. It was loud and it was exciting. And
let's move here. Let's go to this. What are we doing now? What are you cooking with? Just the whole time.
And you had Alton Brown kind of as the MC of the whole thing. And then you had some people, including, I think, Ted Allen every now and then would be like on the floor.
I like Ted Allen.
Yeah. I mean, and this is still 2005 Food Network. So
I like Alton Brown.
Brown was already a pretty established star, pretty well known. They would do, there's a famous episode, which was the first Thanksgiving, where they had like two on two as Kat Cora and Morimoto against Bobby Flay and Michael Simon.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember watching that.
Nothing crazy. I mean, the craziest thing they probably ever did was they did a Christmas episode that was eggnog on ice sculptures. So you had to figure out something to do with that. They did a special one with Obama's White House chef where they had food from the garden that Michelle Obama or vegetables from the garden. But again, nothing too weird. The show was a bit more accessible. People would get a little crazy. I did not get any clips from specific shows because it is protected by a variety of streaming services.
Didn't
want to find any of, or I didn't want us to get in trouble.
We don't need to get in trouble,
But is there anything about the American show you remember in particular?
It's funny that you mentioned like the Japanese one was almost serene and it focused on the cooking and what they were doing and their care and love for the ingredients. And you're right, Iron Chef America, while they do have some, I love elk, I love bison, I've eaten that before, but this was more to put the chefs up front. It's about Bobby Flay, it's about Kat Cora, it's about Mario Batali, it's about Morimoto. It wasn't so much like cooking as an art form. It was making these chefs household names. And that always bummed me out. Like, it wasn't the same thing. And I know I probably sound pretentious. I'm sure people online will tell me how pretentious I am when they listen to this, but it became commercialized. It wasn't as fun. It wasn't as like, I wish they all came with the same energy that the new chairman came. That would have made it a lot more fun to watch. Or anytime I watch it now too, or even watch past episodes, I would always, everybody seemed afraid to face Morimoto because they knew he was just better than you at that. So I would only watch when Morimoto was on. I never really got into it all that much. Like, it didn't grab me like Iron Chef Japan did.
When you go through the winning percentages here, and it's not quite as daunting as what you saw on the Japanese one. Most of the people are around the 60%. Two of them were undefeated, but one of them only did two and one did one. Wolfgang Puck and Stephanie Izard. I hope
I'm Izard, right.
Izard,
she was on. She won one of the first seasons of Top Chef.
Okay. Of the ones that are regularly on, Michael Simon actually has the best record at about 82%.
That's good.
Kat Cora, who is famously the first woman to be an Iron Chef, she's down there with like 63%. And
really?
I don't know if that's partially like just ingrained sexism that we have.
Probably.
Yeah, that's a Bobby Flay was on 61 shows, 205 shows, and he had a 72%.
Well, see, my problem with Bobby Flay too is that like everything he does, he puts chilies in it, so you know that's his cooking. Like, you know, you're gonna get something spicy. There's no Morimoto had different food. Kat Cora cooked different food. Even Michael Simon, like, sure, he's gonna make pierogies every now and then because he's a Cleveland guy, but he does different stuff.
Part of this too is some of the judging. There's some super cuts of some of the judges.
They're all jerks.
Well, they're all like semi-famous people or famous adjacent people.
Donatella Arpaia is one of the main judges on there, and she's like a restaurateur supreme.
Right. So of course she's going to be kissing up to the celebrity chefs.
100%.
The Japanese one, it was some guy who was part of the Japanese government, an actress, and a food critic. And the actress exactly, was the one yeah. that said, oh, this is really good. The guy that was part of the Japanese government is like, eh, it's nothing special.
Yeah, it could be any other fish dish in the world.
Where this, you would have like these people, not just the chefs are trying to be famous, the judges are trying to be. Totally. So they would usually kiss up to the big people like Bobby Flay or Mario Batali or something like that. And I'm not saying their food was bad. I'm not saying that at all. It's just you could really tell that the judging wasn't quite as strenuous as what you might have seen on the Japanese
There was an
version.
Ingrained bias going into it right away.
So let's talk about Mario Batali.
Canceled, dude. I told you.
Yeah, Mario Batali.
He's a creep.
Yes. Mario Batali at the time was considered a serious chef. He had a show, I think, on PBS and then Food Network. He was considered, like Bobby Flay has always kind of been considered a little bit of a clown that can cook. But Batali, he was up there with people like Wolfgang Puck or Emeril Lagasse or something
like that. I believe Ann Burrell was one of his sous chefs on the show.
Batali, he left the show, didn't really say why. They come find out later that he was one of these, it shouldn't be about competition, the show is not about the food, da-da-da. So, you know, kind of this, he's a chef's chef. Well, then a few things started to come up.
Yep.
In 2017, the website Eater, which is a very well-respected website in the culinary world, had reported that four women accused Batali of sexual harassment and sexual assault. By the next day, four more women came out.
Yep.
He was immediately fired from a show he had on ABC, The Chew. He lost his Food Network and targeted, pulled all his cookbooks and all his other stuff. In the years that have gone on, he has been accused of sexual assault a few times. There's one case in Boston where he admitted that maybe he needs to act better in public, but there wasn't enough evidence to convict him. And then finally in 2021, there's a settlement in New York where he paid over $600,000 to more than 20 former employees, men and women.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Yeah. So regardless of what, because I've heard people say, oh, but he was never convicted or he's all this other stuff. Now, Bobby Flay, when he left, it was a little bit of a bigger deal.
Okay.
He got chosen. He's like, I challenge Iron Chef Bobby Flay. And Bobby Flay rips off his jacket, which the Japanese one, they wore these very ceremonial clothes. The American one, they all kind of wore the same thing, but they had jackets that were their individual style. And it said last competition. He had a t-shirt on that said last competition. Nobody at Food Network knew he was going to do that.
So he just decided
to make it all about him. The show all about
him. He's got to be the star of it.
And he made a big, big deal about it. Well, let's talk about Bobby Flay.
Yeah.
Now, Bobby Flay, a lot of this stuff people have known for years. It's kind of like the Bill Cosby thing. But then it finally all came out at one moment. Now, has Bobby Flay lost his career or been punished in the way Mario Batali has?
He's
no. Yeah.
Everywhere. All the time.
So Bobby Flay's been married three times. And divorced three times.
Yep. There were rumors that he was dating Jada for a while.
Yes. There was an alleged affair with an employee of his while he was married at one time. So again, an employee of his. And there was, for a New York tabloid, somebody said that this woman was about to become the Monica Lewinsky of the food world. Flay's second wife, I believe, had her appendix burst and the ambulance took her to the hospital and Bobby Flay went to work.
Oh, my God.
He did offer to send his assistant to make sure she was okay.
Of course. Of course he would do that. What a scumbag.
He is, like many restaurateurs, he has been sued for multiple labor violations on mismanagement of time, tips, and payment to his employees. And then let's talk about Throwdown with Bobby Flay. Tell me about that show.
So, like I said, my son is into this. My son's really into competition and stuff. And the whole idea of the show is, from what you said in the first half, a clear ripoff. You have two relatively unknown chefs. As I watch more cooking stuff, I recognize more of these people, but they're pretty unknown. They face each other. The winner of that faces Bobby Flay. He has two of his quote-unquote friends on to pick the person because they really want to beat him. He wins all the time. And the thing is, even my son has started to pick up on it when we watch it, is that, well, if he puts chilies in it, the judges are going to know that's Bobby Flay's food, and they're going to pick him. And it's the whole idea is, I'm going to make your signature dish without knowing what it is. But nobody ever picks anything tough. Nobody comes there with, I have a swallows and that's soup to make or whatever. It's always like chicken wings, or there was one we watched last night, steak and eggs. It's all stuff he knows how to cook. The show is essentially set up for him to goof around with his friends for 20 minutes and then beat some unknown chef, again, to make it all about himself.
I've heard a lot of people say, oh, these people are getting on TV and they're doing this is good. But I'm like, no, look, we all of us who cook have something that I don't want to say we're proud of, but something that's kind of our style that we'll brag.
I can grill an awesome steak and I brag about it all the time.
Yeah. Today's the day we're recording this is opening day in baseball. And don't come at me with your whole Korea series thing. Today's opening day. Okay. And for opening day,
it's like week zero for college football. Don't talk to me about week zero. It's week one.
With opening day, I decided, hey, well, let's make some hot dogs. And I do what's called spiral cutting is you put like a skewer through it. You take a paring knife. And when they cook, it comes out like this big spiral. Again, I didn't invent it, but it's something that people will say, you know, my wife, even people say, oh, you should try Cubby the way he cooks or grills hot 100%. Dogs because you have to do a grill. So that's like, I want to make these hot dogs and I got some peppers, grill up some peppers and onions and I got these nice big buns, these huge quarter pound hot dog. It's like, okay, that's going to be nice. So I make that. It'd be like after I make it, Bobby Flay kicks down my door with all of his stuff and says, oh, you think you can cook a hot dog? I'm going to use this Wagyu beef and throw some Hatch chilies on it and stuff like that. And then my neighbors are going to be like, holy crap, Bobby Flay makes a much better hot dog.
Yeah, this is the best thing I've ever eaten. Well, of course, he's a trained professional chef. And like, yeah, please dog me at the thing I'm really proud of. I'll think about it every time. How well, this is good, but Bobby Flay took my cooking away from me, essentially.
I mean, that show pisses me off.
It's frustrating because I feel so bad for those chefs. And then when I watch them do stuff and it's like, they make one single mistake, it's going to be wrong. Or I was watching two different episodes where Bobby Flay talks about how you have to cook things traditional and he won that. But then the very next episode, oh, I'm going with a new spin on this. I'm like, dude, you're stealing from these people. You're stealing joy from these people.
I mean, the show's like bullying. The show, and I know everybody's saying people apply to be on the show. They do this. I'm like, I've seen just a few episodes. And look, I make fun of Top Chef all the time. My wife loves Top Chef. But I'm always like, for an hour-long show, the thing could be 30 minutes. Because
100%.
Because it'll always be like, what's his name? Tom will come in and they'll say, okay, guys, we're going to make a mole tonight. And then you get one chef go, I can't believe Tom said we're making a mole. Can you believe a mole? A mole. He said a mole. Do you guys know Tom came in and said we're going to make a mole? And I'm like, the show needs an editor.
one of my least slash favorite things about Top Chef is we were watching an episode. And Tom Colicchio, who by all accounts is like a real chef. I don't know if he's been in trouble or not. I have no idea. But him and all these fancy white people, save for Padma, are all sitting around a table. They're served this beautiful looking crudo dish from a chef. Tom Colicchio's eating and he says, another crudo. I'm like, dude, I'll eat that. I'll eat that daily if I could. Like, I love how they complain about getting to eat the world's nicest food.
I don't think Tom Colicchio has been accused of anything.
Seems like an okay dude. I think he complains about eating too many beautifully delivered fresh fish dishes.
I think the complaint about Tom Colicchio is Padme is like five times the chef he is. And
she is way more fun to look at coming from a hetero male's perspective.
Yes.
Her and Gail Simmons, I think is her name.
But having said that, Top Chef, these are people, probably some of the best cooks in the world that you'll find.
Totally. And they're young and they're like, they're adventureful and they want to do crazy stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even the people on something like Hell's Kitchen who run like lines or whatever.
Hey man, those people are trying.
they are. But this throwdown with Bobby Flay,
You remember when that guy tried to fight Gordon Ramsay on Hell's Kitchen when he got kicked off?
And sorry. By no means am I saying the Hell's Kitchen people are as talented as the Top Chef people.
No. But it's just fun to watch.
I would love to see a season where one team is like Top Chef winners and the other team is Hell's Kitchen winners. Because
that would be awesome.
Gordon Ramsay would murder the Hell's Kitchen people 20 minutes into the episode.
Easily. Yeah, Gordon Ramsay has to coach the Top Chef people and Colicchio and Padma might have to coach the Hell's Kitchen people. That would be awesome.
All right, that's our idea, Hollywood.
Totally.
But my point about it is, out of the birth of something like the original Iron Chef and Iron Chef America, there are some very, very good cooking competition shows. They just don't come from Bobby Flay.
It bums me out too. Like I would much rather watch a show like Man vs. Food where it's Adam Richman or Casey now, you know, all right, I'm going to try and eat this ridiculous amount of food and possibly jeopardize my health for the long run. But hey, I'm on TV. Or even more specifically, and I even wrote a whole blog about this guy, Noah Kapp. Mm-hmm. Carnival Eats is great because it's like Franken food that pretty much anybody can make if you have a fryer. And Noah Kapp is this vibrant young Canadian dude who's just like running around talking about how good everything is. So I prefer, and Ina, you know, our parents know, my wife, her mom knows, I love Ina Garten. She is like a nice cold blanket on a hot day. She's so soothing to just sit down and watch on TV. And all she's doing is just, this is how I prepare food. Here's my husband. Here are all of my best friends. Enjoy this food that I prepared for you.
Yeah, I know my wife will make fun a lot because she would watch Martha Stewart. And yeah. There's one time when she's like, well, just go get your salmon poacher. And she's like, I don't have a poacher, Martha. Yeah.
Well, that's the joke with Ina Garten is use your nice olive oil. It's like the stuff I get from Aldi.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I know the olive oil I use, Ina, is not as nice as the olive oil you use.
That's why I say there are still good shows out there. It's Iron Chef America. Took a good idea, turned it into let's watch these celebrity chefs and their buddies all kiss their ass.
The problem with Iron Chef America is it bread shows like Guy's Grocery Games and the next Iron Chef and Spring Breaking Championship and all this stuff that's like, you know, you mentioned at the top, the winner of Iron Chef Japan got the admiration of the crowd and the people who are watching on TV. I mentioned Great British Bake Off. You don't win a money prize. It's not about the people, but you win a platter. Like, sure, Great British Bake Off does a great job telling these people's story, but they're not there for fame. It's just like, hey, I'm an amateur baker. I do this for fun. But with the Food Network and what they've done is it's all about branding yourself and giving yourself this image, and you have to be the party chef. Or like, that was the whole idea with Next Food Network Star. When I would watch Next Food Network Star, it's all like Bobby Flay, Giada De Laurentiis, Alton Brown. They're all teachers, and they're all telling these people, you have to have an image. Why can't it just be about the food? Like, it should just be about, when you're calling yourself the Food Network, it should just be about the food. Just like MTV should no longer be able to call itself music television because they don't show music anymore. The Food Network should be called like Celebrity Chef Network now. They need to change it because it's not about the food anymore over there.
And I do want to say, to kind of close this up, is the Iron Chef oeuvre did give us some unfortunate people. It did give us some great people. It did kind of change Food Network into an 80% competition show. But then you do have things like Chopped, which I do think is a very, very good show, very innovative show.
Yeah.
The show itself, you talked about all these different Iron Chefs. When I was doing research on this, I didn't realize that the show had been revived on Netflix called Iron Chef Quest for an Iron Legend. And Alton Brown came back. The chairman's nephew, also came back. So after watching he and John Wick go at it, it's like weird to see him again. But it is on Netflix. It's 8 episodes. And the Iron Chefs are Curtis Stone, Marcus Samuelson, Dominique Crenn, Gabriella Camara, and Ming Tsai.
The only one I didn't recognize is the fourth person you mentioned. Okay. I know all those other names.
They have, like, I'm looking at it here, is they have Battle Street Food, Battle Tailgate, Battle Milk, Medieval,
that's cool.
Chocolate. Yeah. I actually might check it out.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
And you know, some of the ingredients, you know, lamb was a secret ingredient in the street food. Ribs is a secret ingredient in Tailgate. Definitely going to go watch that one. The concept is still good. And I think if you get the right people involved with it, I mean, it sounds like Chairman Kaga has gone to his food palace in the hills to retire and let his nephew take over his empire. But you know,
he's probably going to do more stage plays.
Yeah, but it's, for the most part, I mean, the best way I can end this tie is with the wise words of the chairman.
All the kissing!
I love it so much.
All right, well, if this thing on Netflix was a hit and they're going to come back, when are you going to come and challenge Bobby Flay to a...
I would just rather be a judge on the show
Bobby Flay's not on the show. That's another reason to watch it. All right.
Well, I was going to say, I'd just be a judge so I could drag Bobby Flay's food, his cookie on there, but jump on the table after I give him a bad grade on his food. No, you can find me at Facebook and Instagram, Ty Kulik, TYKULIK. All lowercase. More importantly, come read my stuff on SeedSync, SEEDSING, pop culture, sports, all that stuff is on there. Listen to me sometimes on the Chucklehead Chat podcast. I'm still talking to Glenn about being on another episode. I know we had some contacts, some stuff came up, but you can find that wherever you get podcasts. Listen to First Watch Rewatch. Again, Dark Backward wasn't my favorite movie, but I enjoyed what I saw. Like, I enjoyed talking to you about it. So that was fun. And check out our Patreon. But most importantly, listen to me on this Millennial Man podcast. Rate, review us, tell your friends about us, and as always, Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, repeat all that, Seed Saying ex-millennial man. First watch, rewatch, the one I have coming out the Monday after this drops is my wife and I watching the Sofia Coppola Marie Antoinette. And we didn't even speed it up, Ty. We watched it at normal pace. Like Homer
I've never
said.
Seen that movie. Yeah,
Kirsten Dunst, it's a good movie. It's a, okay. And she liked that. Next one, you on the 15th, we're going to do Heavy Metal. So I'll talk to you about...
Very excited to watch that because I've heard about this movie my whole life and I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's something. It's one of those movies. I'm curious about whether or not your thoughts on if parts of it could be made today or should they be made today. But
well, I just watched Tropic Thunder the other day, which came out maybe 10 years ago, maybe more than that. That movie cannot be made today. Yeah, the movie could definitely not be made today. That being said, still hilarious. Oh, no. I still recommend watching it.
No, absolutely. Robert Downey Jr. was Oscar nominated for that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he won finally later on, but that's one of the three nominations he has. So, all right. With all that being said, we thank you for yours. Anything else that you may use to listen to the Ex-Millennial Man podcast? Remember, we're here every Saturday for free, wherever you find your fine podcasting shows. And go out there, Ty, look up in your tree and realize that bird's nest out there may be one of the most valuable pieces of food on the planet.
Yeah, and you know, there's even more precedence today, but stay fresh, cheese bags.
Kshanakshanasa pujile athanga swapna lochani kana kana ta dekhile tuse sarup darpani.
The Ex-Millennial Man podcast is a production of SeedSane.com. Fully owned by R.D. Kulik & Associates, LLC. Producers Ty Kulik and Ryan Kulik. Adequately engineered by Ryan Kulik.